Hello, and welcome back to Great History Stories. I am flattered and grateful that you continue to tune in week after week to the show. It is truly humbling to know that there are so many fans of history out there that share my desire to know more about the species that we used to be. But enough about that. For now, I invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy Apocalypse, Episode 10, Famine. Genesis 41, verses 53 to 57, quote, "The 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. There was famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. And when all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to the Pharaoh for food. The Pharaoh told the Egyptians, 'Go to Joseph and do what he tells you.' When the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because there was famine everywhere." End quote. Traditional wisdom would have you believe that as our technology advances, our societies become stronger. The more you know, the more durable your civilization is. The better your weapons, the easier it is to protect your lands. The better your industry, the easier it is to produce marketable goods, and so on and so on. But there is an often overlooked downside to advancement: fragility. Disruption in one region can very quickly lead to a complete catastrophe for a nation. If your primary means of producing goods is interrupted, your country can explode with frightening speed. For a modern example, check out what's happening in Venezuela. Venezuela used to be a major oil producer, so much so that it was known as a petrostate, a country whose entire economic power came from the export of oil and natural gas. Naturally, as with all countries who gain their wealth from digging it out of the ground, an elite minority seized control of the country's economic and political power, then used that power to spread corruption throughout the entire state. But when oil prices plummeted in 2015, their national income was crippled. The government failed to respond, their people were furious, and they let their government know about their anger, and the government cracked down. This has sent Venezuela into a complete tailspin. In under 4 years, the inflation rate has increased by 53,798,500%. The crime rate has skyrocketed. Basic needs can no longer be met, and the country is on the brink of civil war, with two presidents claiming to be in control of the nation. And I wish I could tell you that there's going to be a happy ending to this one, but I'm not holding my breath. This is the fragility that comes with civilizational advancement. Of course, there are benefits to being an advanced society for sure, but we always must be aware that if an interruption takes place, our entire country could come crashing down in a heap of smoke. But what if it wasn't oil that was interrupted? What if it was even something more basic? What if it was something like food? Say, for example, one day the farms just stop working. Countries could no longer produce fruits and vegetables and proteins on an industrial scale. Pretty quickly, food would just stop showing up at your local grocery store. There would be no food left to buy. Poof, all gone. And no more will be coming for the foreseeable future. What would happen to your country? Well, first of all, cities would be abandoned almost immediately. There's very little in terms of sustenance to be found in a city unless you're comfortable with eating rats or each other. And while some of the more hardcore and or lunatic survivors of the food apocalypse would opt for this option, most of the rational folk would retreat to the frontiers where they could live off the land. They would move to forests and nearby streams where they could hunt and fish without the need of industrialized farming to put food on the table. With this move, you would lose a lot of industry and centralized government. Obviously, hunting down your next meal is going to be far more important than a paycheck after all. Your priority system would completely shift back to the absolute basics: food, water, and shelter would take priority over everything until farms could find a way to get working again, after which you could begin to pick up the pieces of the civilization that you left behind. Or, more likely, your descendants could return to the cities that you abandoned and look up in awe at the life that used to be before the food disappeared. While it sounds like something straight out of fiction, it's not. Famine was, is, and will continue to be an omnipresent threat to our way of life. See Somalia for a modern-day example of the havoc that famine can unleash. It can strike anywhere for a variety of different reasons, but the most common reason is drought. When rain refuses to fall from the sky, the soil doesn't receive the vital nutrients it needs to keep plants alive. So, plants die, including crops. Streams and rivers retract, and sometimes dry up entirely. Lakes and reservoirs shrink, and depth to water in wells can increase dramatically. Droughts are obviously catastrophic to farmers. No water leads to crop failure, which leads to no food, which leads to famine, which can lead to complete societal collapse. But for most of the Bronze Age, famines were localized. There would be a famine in Egypt or in Assyria or in the land of the Hittites, but never a complete regional famine. This meant that one power could reasonably purchase relief from its trade partners in the form of grain shipments. Additionally, most of the powers were aware of the dangers of famine. So when the centralized government collected a grain tax from the people, they would create these massive warehouses filled with grain, just in case a famine struck. This food reserve would be able to see them through many difficult but not catastrophic years of famine if it needed to. However, in the late Bronze Age, we're beginning to uncover that something was going very, very wrong for the people around the Mediterranean. A study conducted by the Institute of Archaeology at Tel Aviv University is starting to unveil that the end of the Bronze Age coincided with an absolutely catastrophic dry event. By studying fossilized pollen samples from across the Mediterranean, scientists can tell that a dry event began to occur at around 1250 BCE and intensified between the years 1185 and 1130, exactly the same time that the Bronze Age empires collapsed. This is an extended 100-year-long drought. Typically, when drought struck, the neighboring kingdoms could support each other through grain shipments. Those who were fortunate enough to not suffer a drought could sell their food at a reasonable rate to the other kingdoms, who were desperate to buy food to supplement their stored up grain. However, if everyone is suffering from a drought, there's really not anyone to turn to for help. Any grain would have to be sold at an exorbitant price, because obviously, even the country selling the grain is desperate to keep its citizens fed. The only country that seemed to be relatively stable at this time was Egypt, which benefited from the consistency of the Nile River's annual flood. And while the floods were nowhere near as large as they had been previously, it was still enough to grow some food, which was more than what could be said for the other lands around the Mediterranean. Recognizing their unique position of power, the Egyptians could charge a pretty penny for even the smallest amount of grain. Pharaoh Merneptah forced the Hittites to pay him a hefty amount of silver for only 15 tons of grain, and the governor of Ugarit added 100 shekels of blue and purple dyed wool as the cherry on top. Now, 15 tons of grain might sound like a lot on the surface, but when you remember that the average American eats about a ton of food a year, this amount of food could feed about 15 Americans for a single year. Granted, most people in the Bronze Age don't eat as much as we Americans do, and they would already be on slim rations. So let's cut that down to a tenth of that to be generous and say that this shipment would feed about 150 Hittites for one single year. That is not enough to save a civilization on the brink of collapse. It's only enough to delay the inevitable. 100 years of famine is enough to strangle any civilization. When no one can afford to lend aid and people are forced to fend for themselves, that's when things start to get dark for the settled citizens of the Bronze Age. Hunger is a very powerful force indeed, and can drive people to do all manner of things in an attempt to survive. Just take a look at some of the worst sieges in history to see just how quickly people devolve into eating pets, stray dogs, rats, grass, and even each other when the food runs out. A lot of questionable things start to look really appetizing when the usual food disappears. Because starving to death is a slow, miserable, and terrifying process. After days without eating, the body begins to consume itself. It will devour any carbohydrates first, then your fat stores, then your proteins, and then everything else. Your metabolism slows. You can't regulate your body heat. Your kidneys and immune system weaken. Your internal organs literally shrink as they're no longer being fed the vital nutrients they need to stay alive. Eventually, your body will begin to consume your most vital organs in a desperate bid to stay alive, including your own heart. It's the last bit of meat that you get before the end. Starving is a slow, miserable, multi-week-long process that is nothing short of pure agony, and it has the entire Mediterranean world in a vice grip. One example comes from a letter from Ugarit, written to the head of a household who was attempting to secure food from a faraway land. Quote, "There is famine in the house. We will all die of hunger. If you do not quickly arrive here, we ourselves will die of hunger. You will not see a living soul from your land." End quote. So if you're an average person, what do you do? Why bother staying in the cities when there was no food? What's the point of industry if you can't eat? Wouldn't it make more sense to escape into the frontiers and live off the land? Hunt and fish and forage your way through life instead of praying that one day the crops come back? Many people ran the calculations and came to pretty much the same conclusion. It was better to go out and risk it in the country than stay in the cities and starve to death. So, people left. They struck out on their own, flocking away from the centralized government to revert back to the lives of their hunter-gatherer ancestors. But starvation doesn't just cause you to slowly consume yourself and die. It can also corrupt the brain, turning people into raving lunatics that will do absolutely anything in pursuit of their next meal. In the Minnesota starvation experiment, scientists observed that people who are starving over a 5-month period experience a variety of mental conditions, including depression, hysteria, extreme emotional distress, irritability, self-mutilation, lethargy, decreased sexual appetite, social withdrawal and isolation, inability to concentrate, decreased comprehension, and impaired judgment. In layman's terms, starvation makes you crazy. And that's when people starve over the course of 5 months. Imagine what the world must be like over the course of 100 years, when every single living soul in the world is starving. Every person you encountered is a depressed, hysterical, distressed lunatic that is hyper angry with impaired judgment. You can imagine that people might start to get a little testy. They might do some things that one would consider rash or foolish or downright suicidal. But when the alternative is to do nothing and starve to death, what choice did they have? Better to die trying to survive than to die on your back, right? So, they took up arms to fight, deciding to take by force what little resources the elite had left. On next week's episode, we look at the next piece of the puzzle in this mystery, rebellion. Until next time, this has been Great History Stories. I'm Mark Syverson.